WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
1988 should not pass without us taking notice of the 100th anniversary of the birth of the master of the detective novel, Raymond Chandler. Chandler died in 1959, but his work had already changed the language and texture of American pop culture. Critic Maureen Corrigan has a review of a couple of commemorative publications and some thoughts on Chandler's legacy.
This year, fans of the hard-boiled detective novel have been raising their whiskey bottles and knocking back a stiff one in memory of Raymond Chandler. To mark Chandler's centenary with more refinement, Vintage Press has reissued his 7 novels. Gone are the pickled corpses and bare-chested blondes who jazzed up the novel's covers when they were considered just pulp fiction. But what this new edition gains in class, it loses in legibility. The print here is tiny, as hard to read as Philip Marlowe's thoughts. Like Chandler's women, the vintage edition of his novels is nothing but trouble, wrapped up in a slick package. Another uneven anniversary tribute is Raymond Chandler's Philip Marlowe, a collection of 23 new Marlowe stories by contemporary detective writers like Roger L. Simon and Jeremiah Healy. These spin-offs of Chandler's style are very polished, but so what? Anybody who does a Humphrey Bogart impersonation can write like Chandler. Well, not quite. The force of Chandler's writing isn't just in his hip metaphors or spare cadences. It's in his whole vision of a world gone wrong. Chandler's L.A. is filled with people who've chased their dreams to the edge of the Pacific, only to be conned one more time. Even in the throwaway scenes Chandler wrote, the romantic will to believe in love and possibility wrestles with cynicism. Listen to this passage from The Big Sleep, where Marlowe first meets villainous Carmen Sternwood. She was 20 or so, small and delicately put together, but she looked durable. She walked as if she were floating. Her eyes were slate gray and had almost no expression when they looked at me. She came over near me and smiled with her mouth, and she had little, sharp, predatory teeth, as white as fresh orange pith and as shiny as porcelain. They glistened between her thin, too taut lips. Her face lacked color and didn't look too healthy. "Tall, aren't you?" she said. "I didn't mean to be." Her eyes rounded. She was puzzled. She was thinking. I could see, even on that short acquaintance, that thinking was always going to be a bother to her. Chandler was 48 when he published his first story. His metaphysical ambitions for the detective novel slowed down his development as a writer. He probably wouldn't be surprised that critics compare him to T.S. Eliot and other highbrow chroniclers of the modern wasteland. Chandler might be dismayed, however, by the new generation of female, gay, and sensitive male detectives who claim an affinity with Marlowe. Sarah Paretsky's V.I. Warshorsky, Richard Stevenson's Donald Strachey, and Robert Parker's Spencer share Marlowe's nerve as well as his awareness of society's moral failure. Like Marlowe, they're outsiders, but their alienation from mainstream America arises from their marginalized cultural identities. And unlike Marlowe, who's both ennobled and disfigured by his isolation, these new detectives seek out other exiles from the nuclear family, and with them create alternative models of community. Their adventures have a political charge that Marlowe's dead-end existentialism lacks. No doubt Chandler would have viewed the current popularity of these female and feminized male detectives as proof of the final breakdown of Western civilization. But these newest inheritors of the hard-boiled tradition really just confirm his hunch about the depths of possibility lurking in detective fiction.
Maureen Corrigan teaches at Bryn Mawr College and reviews books for The Village Voice.